listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
We go straight out to the HRMP guest line, joined by DJ Bienema, covers the Houston Texans for ESPN. Catch him on our airwaves a lot as well, does a phenomenal job. Day one of Texans training camp today, DJ. What do we need to know? I felt like the biggest thing, at least as far as I'm concerned, Nick Caserio talking about contract talks with C.J. Stroud, we've had positive talks, perhaps something even gets done. What was your thought on that? What would you say the chances are that they get something done with Stroud before they kick off the season?
I think it was kind of surprising to actually see Caserio talk. That now he obviously wasn't completely forthright, but more like usually he just kind of goes word solid, and this time he was actually like, "Nah, we've had some productive conversations throughout the spring." He didn't give any indication that they're for sure trying to get a deal done, but he gave the indication that okay, they've had conversations. Now, where does it go in terms of getting it done? That's to be determined. If I had to put a percentage, I'd probably give it more like 30-70 it gets done, 30 it doesn't get picked up, signed or whatever, and then 70 that it doesn't, mainly because with some of these contract stuff, you want to be a lot closer to the finish line at this point versus where they are right now. But obviously things can change. I think that's the interesting thing about contracts. They can change fairly quickly. But it is interesting that, it still hasn't been done. And, in previous years, whether it's Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Mahomes, Josh, those guys got done early spring, right? Now, granted, Lamar is a rare case. He was trying to get Deshaun Watson's deal, right? So that kind of drug things out a little bit. But overall, though, I think it's not a 0% chance, but I think there's a chance it could get done. I wouldn't put super likely, but yeah. I'll put it at a 30% chance it can get done.
Yeah, I think I put it like 20-25 after hearing Caserio talk today. I had it like 5 before today, so it jumped for me. What do you think the dollar amount would be if it did get done before the season?
I think that's where it gets tricky, right? Because David Mulugeta is a big on market deals, making sure the contract extensions I get from my guys are top of the market. And what does help CJ theoretically is the salary cap has gone up. Obviously the salary cap has gone up. So a market deal wouldn't necessarily take up as much of the cap that it would have previous years. So I think David is always going to be aiming for market rate. So now I don't think it's necessarily to eclipse Dak. I think that's unlikely, but more in that Trevor Lawrence range, that Brock Purdy range, and that aspect, because that's what the top of the market is. Jared Goff, Josh Allen, from an APY standpoint, not from a guarantee standpoint, but just the APY. So I could see that. I think obviously if CJ had the type of year that warranted, that we think he could be capable of, right? And obviously, it'd been done already. Because, Caserio, what I give him credit for is if you play towards the top of, you play at the top of your position, you're going to get paid like that, right? Well, whether Stingley, Nico, Will, Aziz, this guy kind of goes on, Petrie, even Tunsil back in 2023, Howard also. So if you play at that level, they will pay you early, Because under D'Amico, how many guys have actually gotten paid during camp? Actually got contract extension during camp. It doesn't happen as often. But yeah, granted, they have a situation like this. This is unique. It's the quarterback, but that's kind of how I view it.
Besides CJ's contract being, probably the number one storyline overall for the Texans and the fan base here, what's number two? What's the second most important thing that you're looking for, that everyone should be looking for as camp goes throughout this year?
I think the return of Tank, because all the other stuff is cool, but it's not the only other one that kind of, in my viewpoint, kind of moves the needle a little bit is where is Kalen Rutledge going to play? Is either going to be center, is going to be left guard, et cetera, et cetera. Is he going to come off the bench? But I think it's the return of Tank and how he fits into that fold when he's back. Mainly because can he get back to what he once, close to what he once was? I don't think he'll get back to what he once was from a dynamic athletic standpoint because the injury was just too severe. Like, it's just, you know, I'm never say never, but I don't think it's fair to put the expectation on him to get back to, from an athletic standpoint, what he was in 2023. I don't think that's fair at all. That's kind of undermining the seriousness of the injury that he suffered. But if he can get back, let's say, like 85% of that, where does that fit into the fold? And that's an extra weapon that now CJ can have. And we know how good Nico is. And if you get 85% of Tank from 2023, it gets, now all you need is Jaden Higgins or Jalen Noel to pop, right? Or play, you know, a little better than they did as rookie. Now we're looking at, okay, now there's a receiver core that is prolific, you know, that can elevate CJ to an extent. I think you always want to have enough weapons to where your quarterback doesn't have to do as much. And I think one thing that, now granted, CJ is making throws in 2023, but one thing that did stick out, there's a lot of times where the receivers were doing a lot of the extra work. Like, I'm just, you know, playing off the top of my head, right? Nico Collins, the exclamation point against the Steelers, or Noah Brown, it's in 5 yard touchdown against Tampa Bay Buccaneers, or obviously didn't take to win that particular game, or the amount of plays that Noah Brown made in that game against the Bengals. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, right? Or Nico Collins' first play of the game against the Colts, right? The list really goes on and on and on. So that's probably the biggest donut for me, like how much can Tank get back to what he once was without the expectation being like he has to get back to 2023 version from an athletic standpoint.
Okay, so we've talked about this quite a bit, you know, throughout this offseason on this show about the run game and that, you know, they've revamped the offensive line again through free agency, through draft, brought back, you know, Kenyon Green, and they've gone out now and they also added David Montgomery to this roster. Is the emphasis on the run game because it's what DeMeco wants to do, or is it because they don't trust Stroud to be, you know, be a gunslinger on this offense?
No, I think it's more, if you want to win in the AFC in December and January, you have to be able to run the ball. I think sometimes people forget that football is, it's not Madden, like NFL is not Madden, and that you just can't drop back and throw it all day. You have to be able to run the ball with some effectiveness, especially in the playoffs. And because again, even the Kansas City, you know, you have Mahomes, and Mahomes made a bunch of crazy plays during those runs, but there's also some other years where they could have leaned on that running game, whether it was Isaiah Pacheco's first year, or even the year after that. I'm trying to think of, you know, some of the years where the Ravens, you know, they never got to a, they never got to a Super Bowl, but like when they made somewhat deep-ish playoff runs, they had a good run game, right? So I think that overall, you gotta have that run game. I mean, shoot, Buffalo, when they got to the AFC Championship game, when they beat the Ravens a couple of years back, I think 2024, Josh barely even threw the ball in that game, and they were able, and James Cook was able to make some plays and run the ball, you know, run the ball effectively. So, from my viewpoint, it's not about the quarterback; it's about being able to withstand the weather elements that come with playing January football in the AFC. I remember the Texans don't have the number one seed, they're gonna most likely have to travel to a place that's cold, where it's Baltimore, Kansas City, New England, Buffalo, like the list goes on and on, right? So that is just physics at that point. And you want to be able to run the football. It minimizes mistakes, potentially. And you can control the game and you keep your defense fresh. So I don't think it's necessarily they don't trust Stroud. I don't think it's that at all. I think it's more the reality of what December, January, and February, well, not February, but January football looks like.
DJ Bienemy joining us on the HR&P guest line, covers the Texans for ESPN. Day one of training camp today. Not giving away, you know, starting lineup configurations or all that stuff, but how did the Texans use Kalen Rutledge today?
I mean, again, like, you know, we're not in pads yet, so You can't really evaluate offensive linemen until they get in the pads. So I think Rutledge, you know, have an opportunity to win that starting role. Obviously, you know, Jake has the incumbent starter. as of now at center. But I wholeheartedly believe that he's going to, I mean, Chandler is going to win that job over Jake. And there's no shot at Jake. It's just more like the reality of the NFL and the reality of the Texans. Like, I think a lot of people kind of miss this point that since D'Amico's been here, the guys they draft early play, right? The only guy that they've drafted early, off the top of my head, I'm talking about like the first two rounds, that did not play immediately, or that drafted early, is just Blake Fisher. Even Juice Scruggs started the second he was healthy. He started, right? So he was just Blake Fisher. That's the only guy. And that made total sense because he was drafted at tackle, the tackle that was drafted in the second round, and he's behind two high-paid linemen, behind Laramie Tunsil and Titus Howard. So, like, it made total sense why he couldn't start because, like, you know, at the end of the day, it's about money, right? Not all about money, but, like, that's just the reality of it all. Even, like, Ariake Ursary was a second-round pick. They paid Cam Robinson real money. Like, he got crazy money, but he got like $12 million deal. And they still started Ariake Ursary, and they moved on from Cam Robinson, you know? Yeah. So if you're a high draft pick, you're going to play under D'Amico Ryans and this staff. And it makes sense. Like I would rather Keenan Rutledge take his lumps at center early in the season. Versus you wait, and then you throw him out there in week 8. You know, like, no, let him take his lumps early on. We already know the Texans, for the most part, D'Amico's been here 2 out of the last 3 years. They might start a little slow, but they finished very, very strong. Like, that we can say objectively, that they finished strong. 2024 was a little wonky, different type of season, whatever. But, again, they finished strong. They started 3-5, and they finished the season on a 9-game winning streak, and won a playoff game. And then the year before that, they started 0-2, and they went 10-5 the rest of the season. You know, so you got to be credit with credit due there, and I expect him to become a starter, be a starter by week 1.
Yeah. I mean, play the guy with the ceiling, right? You know, take the lumps and then try to be as good an offensive line as you can be whenever the games matter. DJ, enjoy the coverage of day 1. The grind starts today, and we'll be looking forward to your coverage throughout the season. Appreciate you jumping on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
That's DJ Bienemy. Covers the Houston Texans, ESPN, ESPN.com. Check out his work here all the time as well. Certainly appreciate it. All right, 713-780-3776. That was the point you made, I think, maybe a couple weeks ago, Joe. Like, hey, even if Rutledge isn't better than Andrews the first 4 weeks of the season, but you think he's going to be better the last 13 games into the playoffs, just go ahead and play on week 1. That way you can, you know, catch him up to speed, get him better, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, just play him and get the lumps. Like, and you know, this is the only time the schedule maybe ever matters is in that aspect. Like, yeah, you're playing the Bills and the Bengals. It's going to be a tough task. You know, those first 2 weeks, you're going to get, you know, Ed Oliver in week 1. You're going to get Dexter Lawrence in week 2. The Colts have a good defensive line in week 3. Cowboys not too bad either in week 4. So, like, yeah, there's going to be some lumps and then even going to the Titans game. But I'd rather him learn early, and then that way when you get to the postseason, he's just good to go.
Yep. Agreed. All right, 713-780-ESPN. A lot of stuff going on around the NFL, too. Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, probably the top 2 picks in fantasy football this year. They're both holding in. How likely is it that any of those guys will miss game? Who budges first? And also some bad news for the New Orleans Saints. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. Is Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Oh, look at our sweats of the day. San Francisco leads Milwaukee 13-3, so we cashed the over there. Missed some opportunity, though. Brian wanted us to play San Fran. We said no, so our fault. Giants, they have a couple players I want the Astros to kick the tires on. Luis Arraez, 331 average. 4 hits today for Luis Arraez. Heliot Ramos, he's 3-for-4, 2 ribbies. I want him. I'd be interested in the Jung Hoo Lee guy, too, but they said they're not trading him. He had a few hits, a couple hits as well. The other game, San Diego, Colorado. We're on Colorado money line at plus 138. We're on the over 8.5 runs, and San Diego leads 3-1 top of the eighth.
Oh.
Well, it's not over yet.
I'm trying to reverse jinx it.
That's not the fat lady sings.
Well, so we could jinx it, but we can't reverse jinx it?
No. Not intentionally.
Jinxes are stupid.
I mean, it's not a bad – I mean, it's worth a shot. What's the worst that can
happen? That can't hurt.
What'd you think of Scuba
Boy? That's a great point.
I saw him tip the cap to the fans. I think it was a good buy.
Because he wanted to get his 1,000th strikeout at home, I think is what he was chasing. He was at 999, so he got that.
Hold on. He wanted to do it at home, or it was his 1,000th strikeout at home?
I'm not quite sure.
I think it was his 1,000th strikeout.
Overall?
Yeah, he just did it at home.
Yeah. I think you're right. He just wanted to do it at home.
That'd be a weird stat to celebrate. It's a milestone.
it would be. It'd be very Astros of
what did he? Football. I didn't see his final line. What did he? Did he leave early or anything?
No, I think he just pitched a normal game.
Okay,
today.
Yeah, which normal 6 2/3. He went 6 2/3 and gave up 3 runs, which whatever, that's not bad. Maybe a little bit not as good as his standard. They ended up losing 10-9 in 12 innings.
Yeah.
They got 5 runs in the 7th, 2 runs in the 8th.
That's why they have to sell.
That's crazy.
I mean, they even came back down. The Orioles scored 2 in the 11th, and the Tigers responded and got 2 of their own. But I saw that a lot of the couple Tigers fans that I follow on Twitter very upset that he was in the game at all today. Just saying it was malpractice. He should not have been pitching.
I get it.
I know. I honestly, I agree.
Yeah.
If you're going to trade him, why risk it? Even Detmer's pitching last night for the Angels, I thought was what if he gets hurt? That's one of your big trade chips.
Yeah, I mean, you still have to field a functional team, though.
Yeah,
you know, you're not going to send them down. Like, you got to pitch your pitchers. 13, you only get 13 of them, and they all throw.
Yeah,
that's tough. I thought the way he was talking to the pitching coach Detmers last night too was like a goodbye. Like, all right, that was the final time you'll see me.
Pulled them kind of early too.
Yeah, they did. They did. They were pretty careful with them.
That feels like another sign of all right. This has gone pretty well. We're gonna take you out here.
Yeah. You with the amount of innings we need to not completely tank our bullpen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt the same way. So Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs are both holding in, mm-hmm. It seems like. Who do you think budges first here? Who's gonna make the first move?
I think it's gonna be Bijan.
Who knows?
my guess and my reasoning would be that Gibbs has more leverage, I would say. Because
why do you say that?
He's on a good team.
Okay.
And they don't have Montgomery anymore. So it's if you don't pay me, I guess you can run Isaiah Pacheco out there and try to win the North this year.
Yeah.
Until I get there. So I think he has more leverage of holding out longer. So maybe the Lions are the team that ends up caving first. But
that's a good point. I didn't know that.
At the same time, though, the Falcons let Tyler Allgeier walk. Like, what's behind Bijan?
Well, they brought in Brian Robinson.
I'll ask the question again. What's behind Bijan Robinson?
Got B. Robinson.
Brian Robinson. But Joe's point is the Falcons aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah,
they don't
but they
really
won 8 games last year, and because of the division they're in, I'm sure they think they can win that division.
That's true. That's true. They probably do.
Think that.
Their chances of winning that terrible division are probably equal to what the Lions are in the NFC North.
I'd be curious about that.
Because it's like I want to say like
I think either one's the favorite, but they're both, you know, they
both
got a good chance.
The Lions are the favorite.
Oh, they are the favorite? Okay.
Yeah, the Lions are the favorite because their schedule's pretty easy this year.
Yeah.
Falcons have quarterback issues, though. Tua's banged up, and Penix is like a month away. They signed Cooper Rush today to take snaps.
Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, who really? My stance with these hold-ins, hold-outs is that it's ultimately going to get done. Like, you don't really see a whole lot these days of players that don't play games.
No, it
just
doesn't
happen. You see it occasionally. But in terms of, like, drafting guys, I kind of ignore these and just draft them without any hesitation. Saints, speaking of that poor division, Saints got some really bad news. Brian Breesy, I forget how to say it, but I think that's it. He is feared to have suffered a torn ACL.
That's brutal.
So a huge loss to their defense. Probably, if this report turns out to be true, out for the season.
Yeah, just to lose a vital player on the first day of camp, that sucks.
Yeah, it's rough.
Lions are the favorite in the North, by the way. They're plus 170. The Falcons are last for the South at plus 425.
Terrible take, Brian.
That's bad take Boulevard worthy, probably.
Bad take. Brian got real quiet.
You just made the list.
What were the odds again?
+170 for the Lions, betting favorite. Falcons +425, last odds in the division.
All right, got it.
What's the separation from highest though to the lowest in the
Buccaneers
South?
Are +164. I'm actually surprised that
that's a weird number, 164.
That the book I'm looking at says 164. It's Buccaneers 164, Saints 265. Panthers +310 and the Falcons +425.
164?
I've never seen that before, I feel like.
Yeah, 164. I'm just going 165.
I don't know. That's a weird one. That's a really weird one. Jadeveon Clowney's visiting Cleveland. Maybe a reunion with the Browns. I saw some people wanting him in Houston because people like want another edge rusher on this team, which I want a linebacker, not an edge rusher. But Clowney visiting Cleveland. Maybe he and Deshaun could reunite again. Apparently, Deshaun threw a bunch of interceptions in training camp today.
Saw that. Back-to-back plays.
Yeah, which, you know, good for him. Who do you think is going to be their starting quarterback?
I think it's going to be Deshaun.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Ja'Marr Chase got into a fight at Bengals camp. He was fighting, like, the whole defense.
Yeah, I think...
I'm watching the video. It's like 1 versus 12.
Well, they had a major injury today, too.
The Bengals did?
Yeah.
Who got hurt?
Ja'Marr Turner? Stewart?
Oh, okay.
Which one's there? I can't remember. Yeah. Ja'Marr Stewart. It is...
Yeah, that was the Aggie last year that held out for so long.
Yeah, don't watch it.
Because they didn't want to give him money. What did he do?
His leg goes in a direction it's not supposed to go.
So did he break it? Did he tear something?
I don't think they've said yet officially what it is. But it doesn't look pretty.
What are they doing at Bengals camp on day one?
He just plants and his leg just goes in the wrong direction.
Were they on grass? Hopefully they're on grass.
Maybe they put it in one of those electrical substations next to their facility.
Yeah.
That's supposed to laugh at people's injuries, Brian.
I wasn't laughing.
You're giggling.
You giggled.
I know I laughed.
You made me laugh. I gave a reasonable guess.
Wheatstraw says, turn out I was wrong. BMAC, in fact, does not know ball.
Mm. Sorry, Brian, you lost your ball now.
Look, I just think that division's up for everybody.
No, I agree. Point. Yeah, no, I understand where you're coming from.
Bad news for the Saints. Worse news than being the New Orleans Saints. Why are the Saints taking shots like that?
They're fine.
Why are the Saints taking those kind of shots? That's messed up. Did y'all see Jared Carabas' podcast? One of his co-hosts said he wouldn't trade Roman Anthony for Yordan, and they almost lost it. I didn't see that, but we'll put him on Bad Take Boulevard for that. Because that is a terrible take. Terrible take. Yordan's the best hitter on the planet.
There's very few guys in baseball on any team, I think, that teams would say no to Yordan Alvarez for.
Right.
Ohtani.
Yordan's probably one of the top three players in the whole sport in terms of, like, tradable. And he's not on a bad contract either.
No, not at all. Like,
pretty good contract. He's affordable for the next 2 years.
Like, I don't know what Pittsburgh would say if you called. If you
they would probably keep Skeens.
Yeah, I think they'd keep Skeens. Because every team's going to like their guy more, right?
Yeah,
So it's always a little bit different. Like, we're going to like Yordan more.
Well, I just want an offensive player over a pitcher. Because pitchers are ticking time bombs. But so is Yordan.
That's true.
Junkie says grown man giggling. I think we've already learned through today's show, especially with their wing takes, that they're not grown men.
Whatever, man.
They're a bunch of adolescent boys. All right, 713-780-3776. So we had a college football argument yesterday. Gary called, brought up some good points about Texas. Don't really agree, but good points. I think he argued as well. But it reminded me of something. It reminded me why I'm actually for a 2014 playoff and why I'm for something else with that 2014 playoff. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5.
Twin Peaks is the best in the game. Your favorite draft support at a frosty 29-degree and rare barrel-aged whiskeys are served just the way you want them. It's bigger on game days, UFC, and the wall-to-wall TVs for all the action going on at once. You got UFC Fight Night coming up this weekend. It's a late one, so it's a great time to go to Twin Peaks and watch the game. Get out of the house. All the TVs, all the baseball actions. You got the scratch kitchen. All the food is good, delicious. It's clutch for when you want to go out there, have a couple pops. Enjoy some good food as well. It's the number one sports bar out there. And right now, through August 2nd, they are doing their fundraiser for teachers in Texas, their back-to-school campaign. Last year, they raised $78,000 across Texas. All you have to do is when you go in, they're just going to ask you to raise up your the end of your check and make a donation there. So they're not going to be asking you for an arm and a leg. Simple way to donate. And also right now through July 31st, you can go to avalanchefoodgroup.com and nominate Teachers of the Year on their website as well. Do all of that at Twin Peaks. Get the drinks, get the views. Twin Peaks, eats, drinks, scenic views.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
All my life I've been searching for something. Something never comes, never leads to nothing. Nothing satisfies, but I'm getting close. Closer to the prize at the end of the rope. All night long I dream of the day. When it comes around and it's taken away. Leaves me with the feeling that I feel the most. Feel it come to life when I see your ghost.
You're back with Jeremy and Joe, broadcasting live from inside the Huntington Bank Studios
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Yesterday we were talking to the college football stuff. Texas, I don't want to play Notre Dame, crying about it. Viewpoint opposite of mine. Well, you know, there's no point of playing that game if you're not going to get, you know, if you're going to get punished and there's not any reward, blah, 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 blah. I think that the compromise here, and I think the happy medium is this, Joe, and this is why I'm a proponent of going to the 2014 playoff. Remember they've kicked around the idea that if they go to the 2014 playoff, they're going to have a set number of automatic qualifiers for each conference?
Yes.
Like SEC will get four, Big Ten four, you know, Big 12, ACC like three each, whatever it is. You know, one group of five, wild cards for the remainders of the spots.
Yeah, Notre Dame guaranteed spot, yeah.
What would they have to do to guarantee a spot?
They already have a guaranteed spot right now.
Well, you can't be in it just to be in it. You have to do something.
Well, just be in the ranking. Well, no, I think it's. I'm being sarcastic. It's stupid they have it this year.
But what ranking? What have top what?
If they're in the top 12 this year, they're guaranteed a spot. They can't get pushed out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I remember it was like that. I just remember the number. So here's the happy medium, and I think this would satisfy Sark. This would satisfy me. This would satisfy college football fans that want to see really good non-conference games. If you go to the 2014 playoff and you just give the SEC four teams, the Big Ten four teams, the Big 12 three teams, the ACC three teams, and then those conferences have their qualifiers in order to get those spots. So basically just the standings, right? Okay, we're going to give our top four teams in the standings these four spots. We're going to give these top four teams in the standings. I wouldn't want to go to the college football committee because then you kind of leave it in their hands. I would want the qualifiers like we see in pro sports where, hey, if you win the division, tiebreakers are this, tiebreakers are that, you get the qualifier for this division. You could do the same thing in college football where SEC, here are your four spots. You go determine based on your standings, these are the four teams that are getting in, and now you don't have to worry about losing to Ohio State, and you would be more open to the idea of scheduling those teams, because if you beat that team, but you don't get one of those qualifier spots, well, you have a chance of boosting your resume and getting one of the wild card spots. And if you lose that game, it doesn't even matter because you have the SEC conference games to fall back on, and that's how you qualify for the top four anyways.
I hear you. It definitely adds a level of protection to these schools. But like just like looking at last year's, even if you guaranteed those spots, the Big Ten and the SEC blow past that number,
which is fine.
Yeah, it's just, and even the ACC and the Big 12, they would have hit exactly their three in last year's. In last year's playoff, the Big 12 would have had BYU, Utah, Arizona. Oh, sorry, and they would have had Houston as well. All would have been guaranteed spots then. And then the ACC had three teams in the top 24 last year that would have made it. Miami, Virginia, and Georgia Tech. So I do feel like, honestly, once you expand it to 24, I don't think any of that's necessary, to be honest with you. I think it will help the conferences approve it and sign off on it. And it might allow what you said of scheduling tougher games in the beginning of the season. I think that definitely would come with it. I'm also just not sure it matters. Like
it might
like,
not.
Like once you go to 24, it goes to 24. You don't have to guarantee spots.
Yeah, but it might be preventative. It might be preventative running into that issue.
You're right. No, it might be.
It would be further down the line, but you'd still probably run into that issue.
No, you're right. And honestly, because what really should truly happen here when we go to 24 is they should just work something. Like they just need one person to make a schedule for the first 3 weeks of the season and say, in week one, the SEC is playing the Big Ten. In week two, they're playing the Big 12. And in week three, they're playing the ACC. And you just do that, and you rotate the teams. And that way, it forces these good games into it. Or what we've talked about in the past, you take the bowl game model, and you schedule at least one game where the schools don't have a choice. That would be the other one I would accept. They're just like, hey, leave week one open. We're scheduling week one. Like, give me that or something to, like, force these games to be played, and I'm happy. I do think once we go to 24, like, Sark will back off the Notre Dame thing. USC will be back on Notre Dame schedule. I'm sorry, I'm using them as a reference, but they're the two most recent cancellations. You know, we could have kept Texas and Texas A&M potentially, you know, during that. I know there were some other issues with why that game didn't happen. But, yeah, they need to find a way to make good games happen early in the season. And 24 teams, I think no matter how you spin it, works. But the way you lay it out, I think it really locks it in, standings focused.
It's more of an automatic qualifier take. Like, it just so happens to be that it lives in a 24-team playoff.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is how teams in sports qualify for the postseason. You look at any professional sport, they don't qualify for the postseason because a committee says that they're better than this next team.
Yeah.
Well, we think Team A is better than Team B, and it's totally subjective, and we have all of these, like, weird computer models that tell us such. How do you qualify for the playoffs if you're in the AFC South? Well, you can guarantee your spot by winning the AFC South, and then you have tiebreakers in case there is a tie. And you can qualify for the playoffs by finishing in the top seven in the conference. And then here are the qualifiers and the tiebreakers should there be a tie. I would love something exactly like that. That's why I'm for the automatic qualifier in college football. And then these out-of-conference games, these great out-of-conference games, all they are bonuses, right? Because if you lose that game, well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter
because
you're
qualifying by your conference standing and being, in the SEC's case, the top four. So Texas losing to Ohio State doesn't matter because all it is a bonus. And then if they finish top four in the SEC, they're in the playoff anyways. But here's why you would still want to schedule those games. One, it's going to prepare you better for conference play. Secondly, there's still going to be a good amount of wild cards where you're going to have an opportunity to be one of those at-large teams, right?
Yeah.
So now you'd be incentivized to play those games because should you win the game and then you're not one of your automatic qualifiers in your league, well, now you have this amazing win on your schedule that you'd be like, look right here, look at our resume. We got this win right here. We might not have finished in the top three or four in our conference, but we beat Ohio State on the road, and that's going to incentivize these teams to play tough out-of-conference games. So that's something that I would like to see when we go to 24. I actually am a proponent for the automatic qualifiers. This is more of a pipe dream take following this. I would love if there was some way to do like a promotion relegation in terms of like the amount of games or amount of teams that each conference gets. Like maybe you reward the team that wins it all. Like the Indiana won it last year. So like, oh, okay, now we're going to give them one more automatic bid.
So like the Big Ten wins the national championship and the next year they get five automatic qualifiers.
Like right now you have...
Hell yeah.
In my model, which is a little different than the one they proposed.
The Major League Baseball All-Star Game.
It's not the All-Star Game. This is playoff football. This isn't an exhibition at all. So the model that I propose is four teams for the SEC, four teams for the Big Ten, three for the Big 12, three for the ACC, and then one group of five. And then the rest of them are wild cards. So that's what, 4, 8, 11, 14, 15? That's nine wild card spots. It's like you still have plenty of opportunity to get into the postseason even if you're not one of those qualifiers. So, again, you'd be incentivized to play tough non-conference games. And it wouldn't punish you because you could still be in the top four or three of your particular conference. But if you could also, on top of that, reward conferences for deep playoff runs, that shifts the number a bit. I don't know exactly how you do it, but like the Big Ten for winning the conference or winning the national championship, maybe they take a spot that belongs to the ACC. Maybe the SEC has a bad postseason. They have to give up a spot. Maybe the Big 12 has a good postseason and they gain a spot. That way it's not this fixed number all time and you're rewarding the conferences that are doing well.
Okay, I have two follow-up questions. My first one is if you're doing the automatic qualifiers, are you still using the committee to rank them?
You probably wouldn't. You have to have somebody rank them, yeah.
Okay, because I don't want to go back to an ACC and Big 12 school or Big 10 and SEC school down the road that are undeserving of a bye and or a home game just getting one because they won a lesser conference. Like, I do like the new format of this last 12-team playoff where it's just the best four teams get the four byes. Like, I would want that to stay. I don't think just because...
Same.
I think that needs to stay in place. Is there a number that's too large for automatic qualifiers? Because you say 4-3. You're being reasonable. We know the SEC and the Big Ten are not reasonable. They're going to say, we want 5, while the Big 12 and the ACC get 3. Like, what? Like, how do you...
I wouldn't like that, because you can still play your way in, right? Like, there's still 9 wild cards, so you could get all the wild card spots.
Yeah, but you know that's what they're going to ask for. They're going to ask for more. And in the Big 12 and the ACC...
I don't think 5 is fair.
They're going to say...
5 is fair.
They're going to say, well, why is it not just even? Why is it not 4-4 and 4-4? Like, why is it not just 16 of the 24 come from these four conferences? I just don't think the SEC and the Big 10 would ever agree to that.
No, I think the ACC and the Big 12 are realistic with that, though.
Probably.
If you went 5-5-3-3-1, that would be 10, 16, 17. That still leads 7 wild card spots.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, I'm.
That's fair. But what I would really love, pipe dream scenario, this would never happen because they're not going to agree to do it in negotiation, is that based on conference performance, you can add or lose a guaranteed spot.
I love that idea.
Like, maybe you have a minimum threshold for each of the Power Four that's like 2, right? But if you have a year where you have – I have to do the math on this. But let's say you have a year where you have 6 of the 8 quarterfinal teams or something stupid like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of these other conferences, the ACC, they didn't have a single quarterfinalist. Okay, well, they're going to lose one for the next year, and the Big Ten is going to gain one for the next year. So where you have like a floor of 2, maybe you start off 5-5-3-3-1, one group of 5. But you can play your way into more, and you can actually lose some too if you don't have a strong year.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
They would never agree to that because they're going to try to lock in their exact amount of money. But I think that would be like the fairest way to do it. It incentivizes the conferences that aren't getting as many as the SEC and the Big Ten up front, while also, hey, you're not up to snuff. Well, we're going to strip you of a spot.
Yeah, I'm all for that. I think that's a great idea. They'll never agree to it. But
never agree to it.
It would be so much fun.
It'd be awesome. Champions League soccer in Europe rewards the top leagues with extra slots via metrics. See, that's where the idea comes from. It's exactly that. Make it March Madness style. How do you go undefeated in division play and miss the playoffs? What's the point? I don't understand that question.
Because they wouldn't. They would make the playoffs.
So division play is pointless? No, division's like division. What division are we talking about? Like, it's
they must be talking
play.
About the group of 5 conferences or whatever.
The group of 5 conferences, if you went undefeated, you would get the one group of 5 spot.
And most years, there's more than one team in the top 24 anyways. Yeah,
I guess hypothetically, there could be 2 of those teams that are undefeated.
Well, you'd probably get one of the wild cards.
Probably, yeah.
More than likely, you get one of the wild cards.
Like last year, like Tulane and James Madison would have made it regardless of format in the top 24 last year.
Which is fine. Like, fine. Like, that's cool. If they had that kind of year, well, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
Let them play. Yeah, I don't get the division plays pointless. Where 24 teams kills college football. I completely disagree. I think it enhances college football. I think it makes college football better.
I think I am more of a proponent of it now. I think if they handle it right, it makes it better. And that's we have to get the big games between conferences early in the season.
And I think if you do the automatic qualifiers, it you would see more big non-conference games.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that, I think you're going to see Sark's point of view, which he has one. He has a point. You're going to see less of that. So that's why I'm pro automatic qualifier based on conference play.
Yeah, I'm as 5 feels rich for me.
5 is the absolute max.
Yeah, I think 4 is the number of automatic qualifiers for any conference. But I know that's what the SEC wants, and that's what ultimately they're going to get.
Yeah, I would live with 5, but you have a bad year, we're dipping you to 4. 5 the max, 2 the floor, and then you have some sort of like performance bonus to gain more. Pipe dream. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Who's your junkie of the day? 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This crazy world is home to all kinds of junkies.
I got a junkie for a wife. Don't need nothing.
Some worthless junkie.
We're adrenaline junkie.
Because I'm a news junkie.
Okay, I'm a Twitter junkie.
An elephant that's a junkie.
But only one can be the junkie of the day.
You're acting like some kind of ski junkie.
What loser will be the winner? Find out with Jeremy and Joe.
Shut the f*** up, junkie.
Who is your junkie of the day? 713-780-ESPN. Houston Restaurant Weeks, they're not the junkie. It's back August 1st through September 7th. Think of it like a citywide all-star lineup. Hundreds of restaurants, pre-fixed menus, and every time you eat, you help the Houston Food Bank. Dine out, do good. Check out the full lineup at HoustonRestaurantWeeks.com. We're going to be out at Federal American Grill on Mid Lane on Friday. Cannot wait. Can't wait. How about the meatballs? Like Bart Scott. Who was the dude that he said that to?
I think it was the Philly dude. Who's that guy? The guy that's always in Philly.
I can't remember his name. But can't wait. That's me Friday. Federal American Grill.
Sal
Palatonio. Yeah.
I think we butchered it. But
Palatonio.
Palatonio, there we go. We got that.
I said.
I'll give you generally correct on that one.
It was better than Jason Duhamel.
For sure. Yeah. Agreed.
I just forgot that guy's name.
Yeah.
I just didn't know his name.
You kind of forgot it. Like, you know the initials, right?
I'm going to toot my own horn on that, though, is I wasn't scared to say it.
You weren't.
Because I also know I'm not good at knowing actors, and I own that. Don't care. All right, 713-780-ESPN.
How about the meatballs?
I love those meatballs, man. These meatballs are great. Might have some of those meatballs on Friday, in fact. Update on sweat of the day. We won over Milwaukee, San Fran. We lost over Colorado, San Diego, and lost Moneyline, Colorado. I'll do the math on it tomorrow. Probably down a unit today.
And lost on San Francisco. Not playing the San Francisco
Moneyline.
Opportunity
cost. Yeah, we took the wrong dog. Sorry, Brian.
Oh, you don't have to apologize, Joe.
Sorry, Brian.
Thank you, Jeremy.
All right, junkie of the day. That's what we're doing. What's your junkie of the day, Joe?
First, I'll nominate the Sacramento River Cats mascot. If you've not seen the video, he was coming down.
I won't be able to see the video because you didn't provide a link.
Oh, sorry. I'll put it in there for you. He was coming. He was just riding his electric scooter down the road.
It's on the baseball field.
Down the field. He's on the field on his electric scooter, and he crushed.
Oh,
Alec Thomas.
Yeah, he truck sticked him.
Alec Thomas coming out of the dugout. No one looked both ways before he crossed the street and gets lit up by the mascot.
You know what are the rules of baseball? Look both ways before you cross the warning track.
Yeah, head on a swivel there when
you
walk down to the field.
That was a huge collision.
Huge hit.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a Z's hit that hard.
No.
Wow.
And also,
Jaguar fans would be so mad if this was Trevor Lawrence.
Oh, yeah, they would be.
Be crying.
You should tweet that.
You should tweet that, please. Okay.
And also, I'll nominate eBay, who apparently agreed to pay $50 million to a blogging couple who they mailed cockroaches, spiders, and a bloody pig mask to. Because the couple was writing harsh things about eBay.
It makes you wonder, like, how high up this decision went when things like this happened.
Yes, it
does. Because I doubt it goes to, like, you know, the top. Like, but someone with authority decided, yeah, let's send them cockroaches.
Yes. With authority.
Thank you, Kevin Hartley.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
It says eBay, it was three former top executives.
Oh,
wow.
Wow.
eBay's still
pretty high up.
I didn't know eBay was still a thing.
I think it's big for cars and stuff still.
Maybe not anymore.
Harrison Bader's an idiot. He was in a scooter accident that further injured his plantar fascia in his left foot. So scooter accidents are all the rave these days in baseball. Texas Department of Safety, their social media got hacked yesterday, and they posted graphic photos on their page.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was rough. And then... have you seen this Tony Romo thing? I feel like a good attorney is going to get him out of this so easily. I'd also like to know what his blood alcohol content was, because he didn't seem that drunk.
I think, like, whatever 2 to 3 beers is.
Yeah, I don't think he was. I wonder if he took a blood test. I really hope he did, because I want to know the results of it, because he seemed pretty normal.
Yeah.
It also was weird, like, when they decided to, like, give him a DUI. Like, it came way after.
It was strange.
I thought it was actually, like, a good whistle, I felt like, for Tony Romo.
the video.
There's people doing AI videos of him, like, dancing.
Brian?
I'll nominate Two Espresso Jeremy for being a little extra spicy, especially at the beginning of the show.
You said espresso. I nominate you for that.
I did not. I did not. See, this is a part of what I'm talking about. Also nominate the texter who claimed Joe said 60-30.
Yeah.
When Joe did not say 60-30.
And I didn't even eject that person.
I know. So I'm standing up for Joe here.
Should have ejected him.
Instead, I'll say he's the junkie of the day. Or
should
she.
A lost challenge be an ejection for a junkie?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. I'd support
that. And just do all the junkies lose their challenges if one junkie challenges?
Can we give him
a posthumous?
Can we give him a posthumous ejection?
Yeah, just hit it as we leave.
All right.
See you later. You're gone, 60-30 guy. Coming up next, Destination 2026, final show of Destination 2026. It's a destination that's ending tonight. Comic-Cast coming up at 7, Hall of Fame. With Brad Gilmore, the GOAT, and then that tomato can, Booker T. That's
the
with
boat.
A T.
The boat.
The boat. I said the GOAT, Booker T, and the boat, Brad Gilmore, coming up at 8 o'clock. It's going to do it for us. Thanks to Brian for the hard work. He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Good night.
You are out of here.
Houston's independent voice for sports talk.